Hello and a very warm welcome to Political Economy with Shweta Punj. We here decode and debrief the policies that are shaping India. All the talking points, all the big events, all the big policy events that are shaping India's polity and economy are debriefed on this show right here. Well, the whole country right now is talking about CAA. It's a new law which is being touted as a very controversial law because it's being perceived to be against a certain minority. To make sense of the CAA debate, what does CAA mean for India? Did we really need CAA? And are political parties politicizing this reform or this new legislation? To understand all of that, I have with me Mr. Amit Pai, who is an advocate on record at the Supreme Court. Amit, thank you so much for joining us. There's been so much discussion around CAA. It's been making headlines in the past 4 years ago, but recently the law has been notified, which means it's going to get implemented. And what we are seeing right now is a lot of discussion and debate about how this hurts India's secular credentials, how India might be heading towards the path where it might be excluding some of its minority communities. I want you to first explain to our viewers, what is CAA?
Right. So I personally think this is a lot of smoke without any fire. At least the controversy surrounding it. Let's just step back for a moment before we come to the CAA, right? India's citizenship, like India as a country, where after we've got independence in 1947, we were really split up on religious lines.
You're right.
Right? Pakistan on both sides, and then there was India, which was supposed to be a Hindu majority country, and Pakistan on both sides was supposed to be the Islamic, the Muslim majority sides of British India, as it were. And a lot of Muslims at that point of time also started coming back from Pakistan. A lot of Muslims remained in India. There were a lot of Hindus that came from Pakistan. A lot of social discord, if I may put it. And it is in that background that, the political beings at that point of time brought certain citizenship laws. Now, what really has happened is, in and around India, our immediate neighbors, three of them, are Islamic states, Pakistan, right. Afghanistan, and Bangladesh, are really Islamic states.
Hmm.
So what is perceivable by the amendment that has been brought in is to give citizenship to the religious minorities in these theocratic states, which are Islamic states now, right? Who have a fear of persecution, religious persecution, or have actually been persecuted.
Mm.
And the citizenship, it is nothing but a security in one sense. Citizenship is being given in a way that is other than what is otherwise provided, just in sort of a short circuit manner.
Right. Yes.
Right. Where they've reduced the time from 5 years, right? And they've put a cutoff date of 31st December 2014. Obviously, that 31st December is probably relatable to the act came into being in Jan 2020. So 5 years prior to that is what perhaps seems to be the object. But if you see the proviso that makes this exception, which, secular credentials, etc., being questioned. I'm not sure that this is what questions are secular credentials, but it is providing the Hindus, Sikhs, Buddhists, Jains, Parsis, and Christians from these three theocracies, which are abutting the borders of India.
Yeah.
Right? Who fear or have been persecuted only on the basis of religion, right? Religious persecution is a thing. You can't run away from it. It is a thing in you know, and it's not something that's a thing now, right? It's been a problem for many, many, many years. In Christianity, you've seen famous people questioning the church being persecuted,
mm-hmm.
right? Many moons ago. So this amendment seeks, I suppose, only to provide some sort of security to these people mm-hmm. who have been otherwise persecuted only on the basis of their religion, and they being a minority in those countries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Now, I don't see why, we are making such a, like, generally in the public sphere, why we are making such a big, massive sort of a halagula about it.
Yeah, so one would think, you're right, so these are persecuted minorities in other countries, and they are being told that you can come into your home country, you can come back to India, and we'll speed up your citizenship. It sounds very fair.
May not be your home country.
But if you're a Hindu, Sikh, Christian, okay,
it may not be your home country, but you being persecuted
mm-hmm.
as being a religious minority, we will give you some sort of extra protection from being persecuted.
Hmm.
By giving you citizenship in a fast-tracked way. That's it.
Yeah. Otherwise, the paperwork and the processes would probably take.
Yeah. 11 years as opposed to 5 years.
So it takes 11 years to get citizenship of India.
Normally. Yeah. I mean, there are ways, you're by birth, by naturalization, etc. But
got it.
This is not something, what is being made out, right? I'm sorry, I may be jumping the gun a little bit. Perhaps it may help you ask me what you think about, maybe react to what I'm saying. It's being made out that, look, Muslims are being kept out.
Right.
I don't think that is accurate. Yeah, I don't think that is accurate. It's okay. Just that from these. Yeah, sorry.
Hmm. So we'll go step by step. Okay, so now this 2014 timeline that has been fixed, right? That by 2014, you should have come into the country to acquire citizenship. So anybody who's felt persecuted after 2014 does not qualify for this and has moved into the country after that will continue to live illegally. Or whatever the case might be. Okay.
Yes. I mean, yeah, correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this 2014 deadline does not make sense for me. Is there, what is the logic behind this window?
Right. So as I understand it, you have to be in India. You must have entered India 5. You must have been in India for 5 years and entered India prior to the 31st of December 2014.
Okay.
Right? Which is practically Jan of 15.
Right.
31st December 2014, right? Practically Jan of 15.
Right.
The act has come in, the amendment came in on the 10th of January 2020.
Okay.
Right?
Hmm.
So perhaps that 5 year period is what has 5 years prior to the act is what seems to be the cutoff date, which is 31st December 2014.
Right. Okay.
Right. So it's not something arbitrary.
Okay. So now my next question, did we need to do this? What was the need of the Citizenship Amendment Act?
That is something that, you know, we have a system where there is an elected representative or a bunch of elected representatives who in turn elect the government. It is generally believed that the pulse of the people is understood well by those who have been elected by the people. Now, whether something is needed or something is not needed, of course, I mean, there may be, obviously will be political reasons for enacting, you know, a certain law. I mean, one can easily ask if X is needed or Y is needed or A is needed or B is needed.
Sure.
But it is normally left to the intelligence of the elected representatives, because of course they command what is a majority, which is really the what is called the will of the people. So I'm not sure whether, you know, we as individuals can think of whether something is required or not required.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. So I'm trying to understand that, because do we have a situation where we've had a lot of people coming into the country who have felt persecuted, and there was a genuine grievance there which needed to be addressed?
Obviously, the government must have had something in mind, and obviously they also want to pander to a certain thought process or a certain constituency, like those opposing it and those for it, right? Everybody has their own political philosophy and everybody wants to pander to a certain constituency. I'm sure that also plays a part.
Sure.
Right? And so now, I mean, there are a number of contentious topics that keep coming up. You cannot discount the political pandering part of it. But really, in law, whether something is required or not, that only the person who is bringing about something will be in a position to say.
Fair enough. So now I come to the point of Muslims, and which has become a big contentious issue, right? We're talking about Hindus, Sikhs, Christians, Jains, and so on. But we have kept Muslims out of this.
Yes.
Now, what is the reason? You don't think that's discriminatory in any way?
Prima facie, it seems discriminatory, but you know, I gave it a little bit of thought. Not reading the government literature, just reading the act and thinking about it, right? Look, the three countries which are named, as I said a little while ago, are not just Muslim majority countries, they are Muslim countries. Okay. India is a Hindu majority country, but it's not a Hindu country. Pakistan, on the other hand, is not just a Muslim majority country. It is an Islamic country. Their constitution says we are an Islamic republic. Right? As opposed to how we are. I mean, today the word secular has a very different and a political connotation to it. But we, you know, believe that everybody is equal before the law as a country, India. We are a Hindu majority country, but not a Hindu country.
Okay.
Therefore, the three countries that are mentioned, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Bangladesh, are all Islamic countries where persons from other communities other than, you know, Muslims, are minorities.
Got it. Okay. So now another point of contention has been that this goes against the grain of our constitution, where we are granting citizenship on the basis of religion. What does the constitution say about this? And does this law, run contrary to that?
So as I understand it, like I said, prima facie, it seems like it is discriminatory qua a particular community. But if at least my understanding of it is, if you are looking at really what is it that the constitution looks at? Two things. One is, you know, what I understand as secularism. My understanding of secularism is, look, the country does not have anything to do with religion. That, you know, may be seriously debated in the way today we are functioning. That's a separate issue. But the country has nothing to do with religion. And number two, we do not discriminate on the basis of another's religion. If there is A, B, C, D, it doesn't matter, right? Who is to be, you know, everybody will be treated equally by the law.
Right.
And everybody will be given their own sort of space to have their beliefs and their worship, so long as this worship, beliefs, etc., don't fall contrary to public policy or health or, you know, morality in that sense. Right? That's where we draw our line broadly. Our constitution also has two articles. which specifically provide for minority communities, whether religious or linguistic,
right,
to protect their own identity.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I mean, this is something that, you know, the framers of the Constitution, because again, when you will remember when we started this talk, I said, our country has a very strange sort of, it's a strange mix, right? It's a very large country and there are, you know, language changes a few kilometers.
Right.
Religious practices change within a few kilometers. It's not as simple, right? It's a complicated country.
Hmm.
And the primary basis on which we sort of found our fruition during the independence movement was religion. Religion became one of the, the principal basis on which the country's formation came into being.
Hmm.
Right?
Right.
So therefore, you know, the Indian Constitution as such has the idea of general equality. Now, when you put this in perspective with the CAA, right, it prima facie seems like, look, Muslims are being discriminated and Muslims are not being given citizenship. I'm not sure that criticism will go. Of course, matters are pending in court and whatever the court says will be the final word or ought to be the final word. I'm not sure that argument is completely sort of in tune with the criticism. Because I'll tell you why. Again, when there is a Islamic country with non-Islamic minorities, as a country, would it not be humanitarian and would it not be in tune with our principles of life and liberty enshrined in our constitution to provide protection to those who are persecuted?
Right.
That's something. I mean, religious persecution is a thing. It's not like the existence of Israel. Right? The recognition that Israel gets is because of religious persecution. Whether it was Shakespeare referring to Shylock as the Jew, or whether the final solution where 6.5 million Nazis were sought to be exterminated.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, another question now. Again, this has been one of the questions that have come up. So what happens to illegal migrants who've come into the country, also from Bangladesh, also from other countries, who are not Hindus or Sikhs or Christians or Jains and so on? So now, until 2014, we've given a deadline that if you've come into this country and you've been a resident for 5 years, till 2014, you can apply for citizenship of India. So automatically, we end up legitimizing a lot of people who came into the country for religious persecution, and their reasons are very valid. But we end up then leaving out those of another community who have also come into this country for whatever reasons, and they do not get citizenship. So I think that is what the key bone of contention is. For instance, in Assam, this is a big problem. This is going to be a very, very, it will lead to a lot of discomfort and a lot of discontent.
It will. Yeah, but you see, Assam has a special place in the Citizenship Act, and I don't see why the CAA makes that much of a difference to the special place that Assam has. But coming back to say the Bangladeshi issue, look, again, that's based on the political history, right? As you know, there was a West Pakistan and there was an East Pakistan, and the West Pakistan always sort of tormented the East Pakistani Bengali Muslim, right?
Right.
And in 1971, just before the war, one of the reasons why India got into the war, right, which is now very famous, familiarized with the movie on Field Marshal Manekshaw and other movies, etc. But But the fact of the matter is, you had large-scale human rights issues where people were being butchered, people were being, women were being raped, etc., on the streets, right? And you had refugees walking into India. So there is no doubt about the fact that in the border, at least on the eastern side of India, on the on in the bordering states, there are problems. Assam specifically has a problem. But that has been dealt with. I do not see how the CAA, you know, does away with the sentiments of the Assamese, or does away with, you know, the Assam Accord, or does away with, you know, how the provisions of the Citizenship Act, our constitutional ethos and morality, have taken care of this problem. At the same time, it is, one has to be very vigilant of the fact, of course, you must give, you know, it is humanitarian to make sure that, you know, the persecuted, not just religious persecution, political persecution also a thing. The persecuted are taken care of in a way. But at the same time, there's only so much you can do. And I think it is best left to the executive government to sort of determine what is appropriate.
Okay. So what is the possible impact that you see of CAA on specific states and on the country as a whole?
Look, I personally think that it's, you know, I personally think at this point of time, it's just being whipped up in a political way. One side says, look, we are doing for ABC community, and the other side is saying, look, they are trying to exclude so-and-so community. But I'm not sure that when it plays out, when it actually plays out, when it's actually put into implementation, because I believe that there is a hysteria of sorts that, oh, but Muslims will be disenfranchised. Not the Muslims in India, not the Indian Muslims, the Indian citizens who are Muslims. No, they will not be disenfranchised, at least by this. Of course, if there is an abuse of the law and there is something wrong, then, you know, the courts are powerful enough to check, keep the checks, right? Because, I mean, it's slightly off topic, but I believe that the courts are amongst the most important sort of arms of the country, for the reason that your elected representative and your executive government, right, need also to be checked by the constitution. They cannot be above the constitution. And it is normally the courts which bring the elected representative and the executive government to check. So I'm not so sure that, you know, until something is played out, we are in a position to, you know, as a soothsayer, go and say this will happen or that will happen. Of course, there will be issues. One of the issues, you know, which has risen is Jews are left out.
That's right.
But it's not. That's right. Yeah, but it's not. But I would look at it this way, that by a matter of interpretation by the courts, Jews can be read into the other six communities which are there in the amendment. For the reason that Jews would be a minority community in these three Islamic countries that border India. So it's not, I mean, again, I don't think we are, I think we're making a mountain of a molehill.
Okay. So do you think if you look at the legislation, does it tick all the boxes according to you?
I don't know of how it is to be abused, because I really thought of, like, applied my mind to it. I'm not so sure. Prima facie, it seems discriminatory to the Muslim community. There's no doubt about it. Prima facie, if you are naming six other communities, six other religions, and leaving a large sort of large actor in the religious sphere, right? Then prima facie, when you look at it, it looks like, boss, there's something wrong with it. But my way of looking at it is, you know, after some amount of thought process, it appears that this has deliberately been done because they are Muslim countries.
Right.
So the chances of a Hindu or a Sikh or a Jew being persecuted in Afghanistan, in Taliban Afghanistan, as opposed to a Muslim being persecuted in Taliban Afghanistan. That this is not even a discussion. Right?
Right.
What are the chances of a Muslim being persecuted in Afghanistan as opposed to a, say, a Hindu? It's not even, the chances are not even up for discussion, if you ask me.
Okay. All right. I think we've managed to clear the air somewhat, just about. But, you know, this is a story that's going to keep us all very busy, and as we rightly should be.
Especially in an election season.
Absolutely. In an election season, it's not going to be easy. And I think it's only this issue is only going to get hotter. But thank you so much.